Mr. Doug Hayes, Rio 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hayes?
I was born the 6th of October, 1924. And it was in the area I now live in, Duggleton. But away from here, it was a row of small semis, fairly rich, in Uptown Lane. And the family ran a farm at that time. And it was called the same one that was outside an actual farm. And it was a family business which my father and one of his other brothers, you know, ran it really. And all the, you know, nephews and worked on the farm. And also, they gave up the farm in 1928. So, because it was council property, really, or somebody bought it over their head. But we kept the retail side of the milk business and bought our milk in from a lot of the local farms, really. And we moved into Beach Road, which was another story in itself. It was a house that had lain derelict for some time. It had been sold off by the Lunacy Commission. The family that lived there, mother and father and one son, and he'd ended up, he was a bit of a naughty boy, I think, and he eventually got arrested for, nasty phone calls to people and, various things. And by this time, the mother had died, and he's lived in the house with his father. Quite well-to-do family they were. And the police eventually went, when they decided they were going to arrest him, he disappeared to France for a few weeks. And when he returned, the police went to arrest him at Two Beach Road. And they did arrest him, but the father was so, sort of shocked at his son being arrested, that he dropped dead at the dinner table. And that house stayed as it was, the dinner on the table. They moved his body, I think. But apart from that, it stayed as it was. And apparently, I can't remember much about it, but they'd stored a bag of potatoes in one of the front rooms. And when they got there, they'd grown through the floorboards. It's a strange story. And it was known at the time as the haunted house. Anyway, there were four lads and three girls, so there were seven in the family. But the oldest brother, Veg, went to America just before I was born. And I think his story was at the time that he was getting outnumbered and he was getting the hell out of it. So I, as most of them, although we're not Catholic, but all the younger ones went to the Rockford Convent. And,
the school?
At school, yeah.
And what kind of an education did you get there?
Very minimal, because I was underage, actually, because my mother was in hospital. But eventually I went to Church Drive School, which I got a fair education. But then, strange things happened within the family. The three girls got a grammar school education, but none of the... Peter did. He went to Rockley High School. But Stan and I both went to council school, which was Newchester Road. And I think what had happened, I think that the family had run on little hard times, I think. And I don't think there were many scholarships going in those days.
What sort of education did you get there?
Not a bad education, but I realise now that it was... I got through it all right, and I seemed to behave pretty well while I was there. But I lacked something in it, and Christine keeps telling me. It's a pity they didn't learn to teach you to spell while you were there. Pretty hopeless.
But was there any subject you were particularly interested in?
No, not really. Well, I suppose woodwork, because my dad was a joiner by trade originally.
And what about sport? Were you interested in sport?
No, neither was the school, I don't think. They played football once a week. I learned to swim while I was there, and There was no extra schooling. It was part of it was bordering on Sunlight Village, and whilst there was a wonderful, they had a wonderful playing field. We had one field that we played on, and it's only the goalposts were provided by whose coat was put down in the goal mouth.
Now, what were you going to do when you left school?
Well, this is where the war broke out, because I wanted to go away to sea, and I wanted to go as a ship's engineer.
Now, I thought you'd worked in the family business.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the family business was taken over without me at the time. So the family, you know, sort of realised that I'd missed out along the line, and they were going to pay for me to go to the technical school in Liverpool, the TTI. Sat the entrance exam, which I passed, and I was supposed to start in end of September, but the war intervened. And Stan, which was the brother older than me, was almost called almost immediately. So that was all knocked in the head. So that was my, you know, sort of my out for the what's name, and I didn't get out. So Stan was called up. So there was only the family as such. It was a bit of a bust up in the family, and the two brothers fell out. My dad and my uncle Harry, and the trouble was there was too many bits of the family living off the business, and it wouldn't stand it. Because there was on the other side of, away from our family, there was Jack and Charlie, and they both had rounds, and so my dad, being soft-hearted, said, well, you take two-thirds of the business and I'll manage on a third. Anyway, of course, the war intervened. And
do you remember the day war broke out?
Yep. I remember being in the room when it was announced. You know, that we are now at war. If you don't hear from you by so-and-so, war will be assumed at war with Germany. I remember that quite distinctly, actually.
And how did you feel?
Well, never having anybody in the family before our family. I think there was just one cousin that had served in the 1914 war. But apart from that, nobody. There was no connection with military service at all. But Stan was called up immediately. So, then of course Peter joined the Canadian Air Force. He didn't want to think about it, but he'd actually joined it. And I, of course, I was still at home when we got bombed out of our house in Beach Road.
So, what were you actually doing between when you left school?
Well, I helped. One of my sisters took over the driving part of it. And I was more or less helping her do a round, because my dad was getting on a bit by then. So anyway, then the next thing...
Had you learned to drive?
I just drove. I didn't learn to drive, I just drove. You know, and occasionally Pat would have a peek on and bugger off and leave me there when I was about 16 or something like that, you know. And she joined the ATS. And the other sister joined the ATS. My older sister actually was in Denmark when the war broke out. Her husband was building a ship, a tanker for Shell in Denmark. And her and her husband just managed to get out as the Germans moved in. They flew out. So the next thing that said, I joined the Home Guard.
So that would be, when would that be? When it formed?
No, but after that. About 16 and a half, I think.
Had the war affected your milk round at all? How did it affect it?
Well, it affected it by, fortunately for the family, was they zoned it all. You know, suddenly, I mean, we'd do 25 mile a day, you know, going around. And they eventually zoned it, and you would do an estate, which you could do in an hour.
So everybody in a zone would be on your round?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be in competition with other men?
No. The government stepped in. And the only people that dodged that side of it was the co-op. And because of political reasons, they didn't want to interfere with them. So
mean, they didn't get a very good deal out of it either, because all their what's name was done by Antrop, and they had all those trucks to push. They had to put two women on in the end, pushing up the hills.
So you were working on a milk round. Yeah. What would a typical day be like for you as a milk round boy then at the time?
Well, I probably started 6:30 in the morning before I went to school, and worked till school time, which was 8:30.
No, this is during the war though. You'd left school.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose you're right.
What was the job like? What did you have to do?
Well, before they zoned it, we had to go and pick the milk up from the farm twice a day, and or the farms, depending on how many farms we were picking up from. And we'd go and pick the milk up. The milk that we brought in at night, we would have to wash the bottles, wash them by hand, and fill them for morning. That was the first round. Now, after you'd finished that, you'd go and pick the morning's milk up. And people don't realise this, we'd bring that back and deliver it again, two deliveries a day in those days, morning and afternoon. But one of the dairymen that started up, because you could start up on your own if you wanted to, if you had the courage and the guts, they said, we don't come out till, I don't come out till 9:00 in the morning because everybody's getting the morning's milk. So my dad said, well, what the hell's he doing with the afternoon? That morning's milk. He was taking last night's milk out, really. But he said he wasn't starting out till 9:00 because so his customers could have the fresh milk in the morning. So, it didn't stand a lot of logic, but he got away with it for quite a while. Anyway,
And what sort of van did you have? Was it like a float, like the modern?
No. Not. We had horse and carts till pony and traps until. Well, when we moved down to Beach Road, which is in 1928, we still had pony and traps then, and we eventually got. The first thing we got was that I can vaguely remember was a Model T Ford. I think it was a Model T, and they used to buy it as a chassis cab, no cab on it. So, and we used that for years, and there were solid tyres on that. And my dad, who was quite an inventive sort of fellow, what he did, it was damn cold enough, he just got with a windscreen on, no cover at all. So he got hold of an old Hansom cab. And with a bit of alteration here and there, he plonked it on this, because it had windows you could put up and down, with a strap. In the old Hansom cabs, and incorporated the old windscreen with it, and it was one of the first in the area, and everybody thought he bought it from Ford, because he did it, he blended very, very well with the chassis cab, and that was we kept that for years after it stopped running. But then we started to buy, you could buy a post office van, an 8 horse second hand for £8 in those days, and they're in fairly good condition, because they maintain their post office vans pretty well, and they got rid of them after about 2 years, so you would go down and take your pick for £8.
And that's what they were using when the war started.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the Home Guard. Which Home Guard did you join?
21st Cheshire's.
And what sort of, how did you come to join it?
Well, one of my neighbours over the road, her son joined, and then two or three of us joined. And in the end, I can't remember, obviously it was split into companies, but I can't remember, I know where we were stationed.
Was it a battalion, the 21st Battalion?
Yeah, 21st Cheshire. Yeah. But I can't remember. It would be a company that was stationed at the, what we now call the, well, they don't call it the Oval now, it's the Sports Centre. But it was Lever's own Sports Centre. And two of the officers, Lever's managers managed to get the officers' jobs. And I quite enjoyed it, really, because...
Where did you have to go for training, then?
To the bottom of our road.
Can you take me through the kind of training they gave you?
You get rifle drill, same as everybody else. They took us out to do a course of shooting at Queen's Ferry. There was a rifle range out there. And we were kids, coming up 17, and we were bringing a rifle on them, and as long as we took our bolt out of it. And sometimes you'd go on a Sunday morning and get out of it and go, oh, Christ, I'm going to be bolted down. But it had its funny side.
How did you take to drill?
I liked it. I like it. It's a lot easier than what Green Jacket drill was, because of the minimal of commands on that. They wouldn't say attention, they'd say move the right and seize quick march, and you have to do everything on your own by, bring yourself to attention. As you marched off, you flicked your rifle so it came to the port, or the other, I can't remember some of it now. But anyway, and I stayed in there till...
So you had drill and rifle training. Any other weapons training you had with the whole...
Not really. We ended up... We did a bit of exercise with the regular army, and we were shown the Smith gun. Never saw it fired, actually. But they had two iron wheels each side, for you to push. But when you got to the firing position, you turned it onto one of the wheels. And then that was, it's a traverse on the axle of the wheels. And we'd do an exercise. There was one very big exercise we did before I actually went in the army, where the army was supposed to be fighting their way down from I don't know where, the regular battalion. And we were supposed to be guarding Sunlight Station, which is up on a rise. And we had one lad there. What's his name?
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, he was a bit go-getter, And he was a Lance Corporal because his brother used to come on one leave, and he used to come in his greatcoat. It had a stripe on, so we called him Lance Corporal. B. Ham or something like that. Anyway, he one night, we were up in this, and we weren't supposed to, disturb these soldiers who had to get their sleep, they were regulars. So we said, hey, he said, have we got any thunder flashes? a few of us will go around, and we know where these people are kept down for the night. It was in those shops opposite, in the entry at the back. So we went and threw a couple of thunder flashes down there, just for the hell of it. But gradually different ones were getting called up. And
what about duties? I mean, that's your training, but yeah. Did you have any sort of patrols to do, or guard duties?
We guarded the main depot, which was in North Birmingham.
Depot of what?
It was a TA depot. But obviously there's no TA there. It had been... a medical unit at one time until they all got called up, and we used to guard that. Well, we used to guard it because we were the younger ones. The rest played cards on them, and we stood outside like silly sausages, guarding it with no ammunition in it.
So it's guard the territorial depot. What else?
That was the main thing. I think we got dropped for that once a week. I think the different sections.
What about any patrols on the coast or around the streets or anything like that?
No, we didn't do that, because eventually what they turned that rose into was an AK battery, the Z batteries, but I had gone in the army by then. They were in Stoughton down where they... And there was a funny story about that. They put some... We had dealings with the farmers down in Stoughton, and one fellow, and he was a real
country bumpkin, really, fella. And he said to me, I can't put up with these alcohols down there. So he said, why, John? He said, well, when I wash the bottles, I put them up on a shelf, like that. And he said, when the guns go off, they start coming forward. So we said, I have to sit up all night and push them back. And my dad said, well, why the hell did you lift them now? And I never thought of that, he said. And occasionally he would say, we always had our names embossed on the bottles, and we'd buy them by the so many gross. And every now and then, but if you ran short, you bought plain bottles. And John would come on one occasion and say, have you got any of my bottles, Vic? And we'd say, which are your bottles, John? He said, mine are all the plain ones. Oh, dear, yeah, it's funny side to it.
Now, what about your call-up? When did that come? Or anything else before your call-up? You wanted anything else?
No, no.
What about the Blitz? Did that affect you at all?
Well, it did when we lost our roof.
Tell me about that.
I wasn't driving at the time properly. I joined in 42. It would be 41, I think, when the Blitz was in Liverpool. So 1941, when we lost our roof then. They dropped a landmine in the place where we would normally have done our training, in the Oval, at the back of the armour houses. And they dropped we used to call them landmines, I don't know whether they were or not. And we get a few around there because I think they've been dropping them in the river, I don't know. They don't know what the hell they're banging and they did drop.
And this hit your training?
No, it didn't affect it because it was the field between the houses and the place where we did our training. And it didn't affect the training part of it. Really.
What about the roof, Sarge?
The roof there, it was the grandstand, and that seemed to, stand and blast everything, probably built by levers.
So that was there wasn't much bombing in the area that you were in, Ben?
No, not the particular area. No.
Were you very aware of the Liverpool Blitz?
Yeah, because when we lost our roof, we went up to my uncle's pub in High Bevington, and he had a bowling green, and you could go up on there and you could see, it was quite high up, and you could overlook the river, and you'd see all the places burning and God knows what. I don't know, I suppose we got immune to it in the end. But the funniest thing of a lot was when some of my customers got bombed, I remember that, she got bombed out. And I was driving by then, Miss Rivenbean. And they said, hey Doug, can you come and move some of our furniture into my mother's house? And the police were guiding me down the road and helping me over the path. Little do you know, mate, I haven't even got a license. But, I don't think my dad was very pleased when I volunteered because that left him to do, because the Pat, the one that had been doing the driving, she joined the ATS. Phil was in the ATS, but she was stationed at Chester in Western Command. I think she was something pretty secret. Would it be a cipher officer or a cipher corporal? When she was for that job, they sent the SIB in to interview the family because she was handling some pretty, critical messages.
Now, how did you come to join up then? You actually volunteered, you didn't wait for conscription?
I was getting, cold. I was getting, I don't know, I just went and joined.
Why? Why didn't you wait to be conscripted? Because it would have been not much longer.
Oh, no, it wouldn't have been. It was. I had funny ideas about service life and one thing and another, and I had smatterings of things I learned at school, i.e. Charge the Light Brigade, which some of our people eventually said in the books that it was a bit like Charge the Light Brigade. I remember trying to get up to the Burbush Ridge. Another thing that stuck in my mind was bits of poems, and it was a council school, so there was the woman who was teaching grammar,
she would read these poems to her, and it stuck in my mind, and I always agreed with it, the principal thing, the burial of Sir John Moore at Corona. I was always of the opinion, when I went to the army, we went abroad, that a soldier, if he dies as a soldier, he should be buried as a soldier.
But why did that make you want to join the army? I mean, both those things would have put most people off.
No, it did. Funny enough, it didn't. I just wanted to join because the rest of my brothers were in, and it was getting a bit like the Four Feathers stunt. And if I hadn't gone, I'd have been the odd one out.
Now, what was the procedure when you went to join up then? Where did you go to sign on?
The main recruiting place in Liverpool, Renshaw House in Liverpool.
And what was the procedure? What do you remember of going to?
Just went. And as a matter of fact, my brother-in-law went with me. And he was in the Paris at the time. And he went, yes, I'll come with you. So anyway, he went there and he went in and was interviewed and went back 2 or 3 days later for my medical. And they said, all right, we'll send for you when we want you.
Now, what had the interview been about?
It was about what I wanted to go in. I was interviewed by the Royal Marines, Navy, and the Army people. And I wanted to go in the Army. So they said, anyway, that was okay. And I said, he said, what do you want to go in? And I said, not mentioning that my brother was in the tanks already, I said, I want to go in the tanks. So they took them at face value. So anyway, it wasn't until... I was to report to York on the 3rd of December. And the day that happened, I know I'm going off the beat a bit here, but my brother was going back to Dishforth, and we travelled up on the same train. Now, I was changing trains at Leeds, and he was going on. So I ran down the, my sister was stationed in York, she was stationed at Roundhill Park, I think. And I said to her when I got there, I said, Peter's on the train. So she ran the whole length of the platform. Now that's the last time she saw him, last time I saw him, because he was killed on the 9th of December. So that always sticks in the family mind, in the family psyche. And
now, what happened when you got to? It was Fulford Barracks to, and this was what was it you were going to?
I thought it was going to. I didn't realise I was going to. What do they call it? General Service Corps. There was no mention of that, as far as I was concerned. I was in a platoon of Rifle Brigade. Because all the NCOs were Rifle Brigade people. And
how did you? What was your reception like when you got there? How did they take you as a callow youth?
But I was in uniform because I was in reported in Home Guard uniform. But
what was your reception like then?
Not too bad. It didn't faze me at all. You got that snide remark, you know, this bastard doesn't know what size shoes he wears and boots he wears. But it was all right. The NCO did give us the run around.
What was your accommodation like? Well,
not too bad. It was very old, very old-fashioned barrack rooms. You know, double tier bunks in them.
How many to a room?
A whole platoon would be in there, about 30 of them. And that was all.
And